Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Last May, a study by Northern California grantmakers found that a whopping 82% of the 500 nonprofits they surveyed are worried about their survival. 68% think the cost of office space will force them to relocate within 5 years. Nonprofits serving communities of color and low-income communities say that they are even more vulnerable. We're seeing a lot of San Francisco nonprofits moving to downtown Oakland, but now the vacancy rate there is only 5%. That is one of the lowest vacancy rates in the country. And then because housing costs are so high, many people working for nonprofits are struggling to live in the communities they serve. This is an issue that we've been covering and will continue to cover. Today, we're going to get an update and find out how nonprofits are coping and what cities and different groups are doing to address this issue. Joining us in studio is Marissa Raya, an analyst with the City of Oakland in the Economic and Workforce Development Department. Marissa has been working with nonprofits needing relocation assistance for the past year. Hi, Marissa. Thank you for coming in.
Thanks for inviting me.
Also in studio is Joanne Lee, and she's with the Northern California Community Loan Fund. They provide financial consulting, and they help funnel money to organizations working for social and economic justice. The Community Loan Fund has worked with the cities of Oakland and San Francisco to help community-based groups find and stay in their spaces. Hi, Joanne. Thank you for coming in.
Happy to be here, Rose. Thanks.
We're also joined by Brandon Nicholson, founder and director of the Hidden Genius Project. They provide training and mentorship to young Black male high school students in computer science, software development, and leadership. An Oakland native, Brandon was one of five Black male entrepreneurs and technologists who established the Hidden Genius Project back in 2012. Hi, Brandon. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, thank you for having me on.
It's great to have you. Brandon, I want to start off with you. I love what you're all doing there at the Hidden Genius Project. On a separate show, I'd love to have some of the young men on the show. Just give us a sense of what you're all doing.
Sure. So just real quickly, our mission is to train and mentor Black male youth in technology creation, entrepreneurship, and leadership skills to transform their lives and communities. And we offer a number of programs, but going back to 2012, our core program has always been our intensive immersion program, which is a 15-month cohort-based component wherein we bring in young men in high school, Black males in high school, together to go through 15 months of training around certainly the fundamentals of computer science and problem solving and software development, as you mentioned, but also understanding entrepreneurship and social entrepreneurship and how to identify opportunities and problems in their communities and build ideas that can help address those. And then all wrapped around that is a constant and continual exploration of identity development, social and community justice, and understanding how they relate to the world. And having them build their own network for change around, you know, their communities as a cohort, and then, of course, you know, committing to make positive contributions to their environments. And so that experience, that 15-month experience, culminates in them building their own software project from start to finish, and it frequently incorporates some, you know, community issue they've addressed, ranging from, you know, need for access to college, need to save money, concern about formerly incarcerated relatives reentering community and needing to find employment, and you know, individuals who need to pay for expensive medical treatments but don't have enough health care coverage. You know, and there's some, you know, kind of less heavy ones as well. You know, we have a young man who built a project around helping people in the community access muscle cars, you know, online. So there's a nice range of projects. But more than anything, we're seeking to build quality young people and raise quality young men who just understand that they've got a great deal of potential. And regardless of what their interest or passion is or what pathway they pursue, we just want them to know that they're extremely capable, and we try and build skills around them to make sure they can, you know, see as much.
So this is such an important organization that you're running, and you started this back in 2012, and we've seen so many changes in the Bay Area over the last 5 years. I understand that when you started this in 2012, when you were looking for office space, it was about $1 per square foot, and landlords were giving several months free to tenants.
That's absolutely right. You know, and what I do need to say, certainly for the purposes of this show, is that, you know, we've been extremely fortunate, you know, as an organization, you know, even now, after all the changes we've gone through, I know we'll discuss that, but, you know, certainly going back to the beginning, and that we were very fortunate to connect with an extremely, I guess, magnanimous property owner, set of property owners. Actually, the first entity that hosted us eventually just agreed to host us in their space for free. And, you know, they so greatly believed in our mission, and I think at the time vacancy was an issue, and they had space, you know, that they wanted just to make sure was occupied, right, that it was active. So they just hosted us there. And eventually, actually, the original space we were in got sold to a new owner, and the owners of our space initially thought that they should advocate on our behalf to the new owner to basically set up an advantageous deal for us. Again, during that timing, that new owner had the same interest in having all of his spaces kind of well occupied, and so he actually moved us out of the space where we were, but to another space in downtown Oakland, and allowed us to stay, you know, on a sweetheart deal. But at the time, there are many options, certainly, and, you know, including options, as you mentioned, around the $1 to $1.50 square foot mark. And, you know, it was a situation where many organizations like ours, I think, to some extent had their pick, you know, and for years, you know, I grew up in Oakland and had been working there even before the Hidden Genius Project, you know, for 5 years. For years, you know, all people spoke about was how, you know, downtown wasn't a wholly desirable, you know, location, so that it was always easy to find some place, and there were always landlords and owners that were willing to, you know, develop advantageous deals for tenants, particularly in the nonprofit space.
And I understand that the Hidden Genius Project got assistance from the City of Oakland and the Northern California Community Loan Fund. Can you tell us how that works, Joanne?
Sure. We actually met Brandon at one of our real estate readiness workshops maybe about a year ago, and he approached some of our staff that were there. I have tremendous, really wonderful staff, and hooked up with one of our staff, one of our real estate consultants, who was able to provide some technical assistance to Brandon in looking at what their options were in Oakland and reviewing some leases to help him find something that worked for him and his space needs and his budget, meeting his budget needs.
What other services do you provide? Say, for example, a nonprofit is struggling to find space. They can't afford rent. Maybe they think that the building's going to be sold. What role does your group play?
We see a lot of organizations that are in that predicament. Their leases may be terminating. Their landlords may either not be renewing their lease or giving them a, you know, kind of a market rate lease that could be, you know, 2 to 3 times more than what they're paying now. We help them really assess what their space needs and where they could be located. Many times organizations have been somewhere for 5 or 10 years. Some of these leases were signed during the recession, and so now they're really getting some sticker shock now. And, you know, their demographics, their clients may change. Since then, people work differently, and so their space needs may be changing. So we really start there. We help them look at their budget and see what they can afford and give them some help with their financial planning. We can help them identify and evaluate space, and we work with brokers, but we also work with you know, many landlords and owners, and we'll look at space with organizations and help them negotiate either leases or purchase agreements, put together any tenant improvement budgets if they need that, or helping put together development team members.
Marissa, the City of Oakland also stepped in to help the Hidden Genius Project.
Yeah, I actually met Brandon and Hidden Genius because I also work with the city's tech sector, and organizations like Hidden Genius Project are really fundamental to how we want the tech sector to grow. And so Brandon let me know that they were going to be moving out of their space, and I'm part of the city's business development team, and one of the main things that we do is business retention. So supporting organizations and businesses that are in Oakland to grow and thrive and stay in Oakland. So our services begin with an initial site search. So we ask kind of how much do you want to pay? Where do you want to be located? What are you looking for? And we kind of look at the market and say, here's some properties that we think fit where you are. We can refer to a broker. And we also know sometimes about properties that are off market. So we know a company that's moving or a company that's moved into a new space and they have space to sublet. And then the city also gives about a dozen nonprofits, some of which we've been working with for a long time, no rent agreements in city properties because they're providing services, often like classes for youth or maintenance of a parks facility.
How do you choose those nonprofits?
They have to comply with a part of our city code that governs no rent lease agreements that says, generally, we are supposed to offer city real estate at market rate, but if an organization is found to be providing services that are in excess of the services to the city and city residents that are in excess of the value of the real estate, the council can approve them having a no-rent lease agreement.
Well, we'd love to hear from you. We've done so many shows about nonprofits, arts organizations. We will continue to follow this issue and cover this issue. If you run a nonprofit, if you work for a nonprofit, what is your current status? Have you been affected by high rents and displacement? And then if you work for a nonprofit, are you able to live in the community you serve? You can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can tweet us at your Call Radio or email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Brandon, where is your office located today?
Well, we're very fortunate, and I should probably share a little bit about how it came to be, but just quickly, our office is now on Telegraph Avenue between 29th and 30th Street. So thankfully, we didn't have to stray too far from downtown, particularly knowing that so many organizations have had to move, either out of the city altogether or much farther east or well off the beaten path somewhere. We ended up in the space. We ended up with a partner organization, Oakland Natives Give Back, and they're an Oakland-based nonprofit basically working on school persistence and, retention to, of course, prevent attrition and dropout. They have a great like-minded mission to serve our young people. They were in our building as well, and kind of what I didn't get to share previously was the building we were in eventually got forced for sale as a result of a fairly nasty legal battle in which our owner was embroiled. And so we were all kind of going to be out on our ears, so to speak, in the sense that the new owners were not interested in sustaining even probably a favorable relationship, right? They want us in around what they viewed as market, and by many accounts, including our NCCLF consultants, even what they were referring to as a market rate was probably high for the space we were in and its current quality. But the reality was that they were looking to renovate fairly extensively, including knock down our floor altogether and turn it into a single-tenant occupancy floor. And so that meant that, they could benevolent and put us in the basement at probably what they called a market rate, of course, or we could leave. Even what they offered wasn't really going to work for either of us. So as we entered the space and Marissa and the city were helping us and our NCCLF consultant Jack and their nonprofit were supporting us, we were looking a lot first on our own, each organization was, and we just weren't getting as much traction with the rates, going as high as $3.50 a square foot or higher in downtown. So we ended up realizing we'd probably be better off combining forces, having a little bit more leverage to go after a larger space. Landed in a 5,200 square foot space on Telegraph, and it took even then, a good deal of tenant improvements and the like, and a lot of leadership from the executive director of Oakland Natives Give Back, Dr. Naisha DeWitt. But we were able to make it happen, but it's just amazing how much we had to learn about real estate and negotiations and all these things. And that's par for the course, but because it's such an aggressive landscape, we actually had been in a 3-month process for a space together right downtown near 17th and Broadway, and basically had it all fall apart when a large developer came in that wanted to use that space as their home base as they were running contracts. and building, renovating other buildings around. And so they came in with a lot of cash and completely put a halt to our 3-month negotiations. So we had to learn some hard lessons, but we're very fortunate to have landed on our feet.
Brandon Nicholson is founder and executive director of the Hidden Genius Project. When he was looking for office space in 2012 in downtown Oakland, it was about $1 per square foot, and now it's up to $350 per square foot. And the Hidden Genius Project is an incredible organization providing training and mentorship to young Black male high school students in computer science and software development. We're also joined today by Joanne Lee. She's with the Northern California Community Loan Fund. They provide financial consulting and help funnel money to organizations working for social and economic justice. And Marissa Ryer is an analyst with the City of Oakland in the Economic and Workforce Development Department. And if you work for a nonprofit, if you run a nonprofit, we'd love to hear from you. How are you managing to survive? What changes are you seeing? Are you able to live in the communities you serve? And then if you just care about this issue, if you care about all of the nonprofits that do so much incredible work in the Bay Area, if you have any questions for our guests about how decisions are made when it comes to helping organizations financially, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255. You can tweet us at Your Call Radio or email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Joanne, your organization, the Northern California Community Loan Fund, runs the San Francisco Nonprofit Displacement Mitigation Program, which was started in 2014. Tell us about that and why your group decided to start this program.
Well, it was really in partnership with the City and County of San Francisco and really led by Mayor Lee and his staff with strong support from the Board of Supervisors. They put in $4.5 million for a 3-year program to provide both technical assistance to nonprofits, as we've been talking about, but also some grants to help with one-time relocation costs, and to help with acquisition for organizations that were able to buy their properties. So over those 3 years, we've been able to work with about 77 organizations in providing technical assistance services. We've administered a little over $3 million in grants to 61 organizations that have then been able to secure over 400,000 square feet of nonprofit used space in San Francisco. So I think we've been able to really, you know, help these organizations stay in the neighborhoods, in the communities that they've been serving, helping them find space that can meet their budget needs, be creative in space sharing, kind of like the example that Brandon just talked about, and to find things that are, you know, off market for them. And this program is sunsetting this fall. It was a 3-year program, and the mayor has just put in another $9 million for this kind of the second phase of a program to help with nonprofits and their space needs called the Nonprofit Sustainability Initiative.
And again, how are the nonprofits chosen? Because when we do shows about arts organizations, we often hear from different groups who say their rents are drastically increasing, and then they do these GoFundMe campaigns, and the artistic director is spending more time raising money than she is creating a dance performance, for example. So can you talk about how various groups are chosen?
Sure. In San Francisco, for these two programs, we have an online application process for the technical assistance program. It's been on a rolling basis for the displacement program. For this new sustainability initiative, actually, our application round just opened yesterday, and so you can find the applications on our website. There is $1.8 million available in this round for organizations seeking to purchase property, and we also have RTA services open for organizations to apply for.
Are you overwhelmed with applications?
We were when we first started in 2014. You know, every time you launch something, there's pent-up demand, and we've had ongoing services, and people continue to apply. We're never, you know, at a lull. We've certainly had more requests for funding than what we've been able to fund. And so that demand continues to exceed the grant funds available.
What did you think when this Northern California Grantmakers survey came out? They questioned 500 nonprofits throughout the Bay Area, and 82% said they're concerned about being able to pay rent. A lot said that they think that they'd be gone in the next 6 years. In fact, more than a third have already moved, with cost being the main factor.
It was really sobering. I think it put the numbers to what we've been feeling in the field. It's a broad range. I'm very familiar with the Northern California Grantmakers, and have been working with their working group to look at kind of Bay Area regional solutions to this. That survey was multi-county, I think, in the whole nine Bay Area counties.
Right.
But it's an issue that affects, you know, not only San Francisco and Oakland, but throughout the Bay Area as the real estate market keeps increasing.
It's shocking to look even in the North Bay, and Santa Rosa has had some of the highest rent increases mm-hmm. across the state. The rents up there are just skyrocketing. Marissa, what was the city of Oakland's response when this study came out?
Well, I think you mentioned it when we kicked off the show, but the really valuable thing for us in the survey was the emphasis on nonprofits that serve communities of color and low-income communities. Because the results for Oakland, and we actually worked out a deal with Northern California Grantmakers to get just Oakland-specific results. There were about 181 of those nonprofits that were in Oakland. And it's so valuable to have a survey, because when you're trying to get a handle on the scale of a displacement issue, you actually need to talk to people and say, did you move because of, or are you likely to move because of rents? There's no other way to get that information. So that was very valuable. The survey overall found that a smaller percentage of Oakland nonprofits at the time of the survey, which was the end of 2015, were at risk for displacement, but a larger proportion of those who were serving communities of color were at risk. And so for us, it's easy to look at the nonprofit sector in Oakland overall and see that it's actually doing very well. It's continuing to grow in Oakland. Nonprofits are buying buildings. As you said, some are moving from other areas and finding more affordable rents in Oakland. But we can, I think, really focus our attention and try to target the assistance and services that we have on the nonprofits that are most rooted in our communities of color, where we're also trying to get a handle on displacement pressure from the residential side.
And can you talk about how Oakland is being affected by so many nonprofits moving there, especially San Francisco? I have a lot of friends who work for different environmental groups, for example, and
right.
they've moved their buildings to Oakland.
Yeah, there's been some interesting ones, like the California State Stem Cell Research Agency, which was the anchor tenant in Mission Bay, mm-hmm. And had a sweet free 10-year deal in Mission Bay to try to launch the success of that development in San Francisco. When their deal was up, and they and they're a taxpayer-funded agency, we all give them like $3 a year or something, they found a more affordable location in Oakland. That's not the type of nonprofit, I think, that when we talk about nonprofit displacement, we're thinking mm-hmm. of. We're thinking of groups that provide essential services to city residents. I think it's been there's been a lot of positives for nonprofits moving to Oakland. So some, like California Rural Legal Assistance, that supports farm workers throughout the state, bought a building, and they share some of their space with local nonprofits. And the Greenlining Institute, who's been a real champion on this issue, managed to buy a building in right in downtown Oakland before mm-hmm. prices started to rise. They've been a kind of go-to place for a lot of nonprofits to try to co-locate with them. And of course, there's more demand than the space they're able to offer.
Raya is an analyst with the City of Oakland in the Economic and Workforce Development Department. She's been working with nonprofits needing relocation assistance for the past year. We're also joined today by Joanne Lee. She's with the Northern California Community Loan Fund. They provide financial consulting and help funnel money to organizations working for social and economic justice. Brandon Nicholson is executive director of the Hidden Genius Project. They provide training to young Black male high school students in computer science and development. And they started back in 2012. And at that time, space in downtown Oakland was about $1 per square foot. Now it can run as high as $3.50 per square foot. Today, we are talking about nonprofits, and we just want to get an update. How are you surviving if you work for a nonprofit, if you run a nonprofit? What changes are you seeing in terms of rent? And then what about if you work for a nonprofit, are you able to live in the community you serve? This is Your Call, and we'll be back after this.
Your call is better when you get involved. If you have a question, idea, or experience to contribute to today's conversation, call 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255, toll free. You can also send an email to feedback@yourcallradio.org or leave a comment on the show's website. Set a bookmark for yourcallradio.org, and you can also tweet us at Your Call Radio.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, it's our media roundtable. We'll be talking about media coverage of the status of the single-payer bill here in California. And then we'll also talk about media coverage of the Senate Republican health care bill, which drastically cuts Medicaid and provides another tax cut for the ultra-wealthy. We'll be talking about how those two issues are being covered. If a story stood out for you this week or any coverage on the radio, we'd love to hear from you. Feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today on Your Call, we are talking about the state of nonprofits. We have covered this issue extensively over the past few years and will continue to cover it. We often hear from arts organizations and various nonprofits about the cost of rents in the Bay Area. If you run a nonprofit, if you work for a nonprofit, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255. Do you think that city governments are doing enough to tackle this issue? What changes would you like to see? You can also tweet at Your Call Radio or drop us an email, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today, we're joined by Marissa Raya, analyst with the City of Oakland and the Economic and Workforce Development Department. Joanne Lee is with the Northern California Community Loan Fund, and Brandon Nicholson is founder of the Hidden Genius Project. And Brandon, before we let you go, what are you hearing from friends who run nonprofits or friends who work for nonprofits? How are they coping? And then also, what changes would you all like to see?
Well, I think in terms of what I'm hearing and what people are experiencing, is it's just difficult. You know, it's already challenging enough as it is day to day to make sure you can sustain the work. For each of our organizations, and so to have to contend with, just the uncertainty and anxiety, and in some instances, I think as you go through it, can actually even be traumatic, right? To have to feel, ripped out of space, and you have people who've gotten used to not just being in spaces, but the people they serve, particularly when they're working with young people, have gotten used to being able to access those spaces. So you can imagine being in downtown Oakland as a transit hub. Basically, that means many nonprofits operating down there were often sandwiched between two very close by BART stations, a number of AC transit bus lines, a great deal of accessibility in terms of even driving or walking from certain locations. And so they're nervous about that and trying to figure out how to manage that, also being in neutral territories, right? So not having to worry about involvement in street organizations and the like, and also just having to raise that much more money, right? And it's already very difficult to do this work, and not being able to have that peace of mind can be a challenge. I think in terms of what people, the types of support we need or looking for is just to keep, I think, elevating and understanding that I think what makes Oakland a fantastic place is all of its diverse demographics and the people who are able to be here and be themselves. The place changes as people have to leave, and there are nonprofits that put a lot of work into serving those people because of the systemic issues, systemic racism, class issues, sexism, so on and so forth, that have created lack of access to resources, imbalance and inequity in terms of access to opportunities. And so these nonprofits are, grinding every day to try and, get people, access and help give people a voice and help give people hope. Mm. And so it's so important to invest in that. And it's very difficult when we have to do it on our own. So opportunities and structures allow us to come together and pool our resources or allow us to be in, nonprofit hubs.
You make such a good point here.
The work being done by organizations that have been here for decades and that are comprised of people, including people of color and leaders of color who have been here for decades, such that we don't only privilege the work of organizations that have just gotten here or just gotten, big grants or happen to know more people
right.
who are moving in or in the most influential places now. And so I think there just needs to be, balance and equity in that respect, and that we have to retain our history and our culture throughout that process.
It's such a good point, because I know a lot of people feel like changes are being made for the tech sector because so much money is coming into the cities, and they've got the money to, get the office space, for example. And I think you make a really good point about also focusing on marginalized communities and communities of color. And the trauma that you brought up is also important, because at St. Anthony's, I remember talking to some people who work on their clothing drive. They make sure that people have clothing on a regular basis. They make sure people are fed on a regular basis. That work in and of itself can be very stressful and difficult. The people who have those jobs have a hard time even living in the Tenderloin. Right. So, Brandon, can you talk more about that? And do you feel like there's a support system that can also make sure people have some kind of space so they can talk about those issues and they're not just dealing with this on their own, just struggling to make ends meet?
Yeah, that's an important question. I would be lying if I said I had all the answers to it, but I can definitely say that there's certainly, and we talk about it, and we definitely need, I think, more resources somehow to have healing center conversations about the experiences we're having around space. And it's difficult because I think in this work, many of us are so fortunate, obviously, to be working, and it's important and a privilege and an honor, even though I believe certainly it's a right to be able to be gainfully employed. But it's a privilege and honor to be able to do the work that I'm doing and be able to earn a living. But that said, having grown up here and working alongside so many people who work in social impact spaces here throughout Oakland and the Bay Area, who have grown up here in Oakland, it's just very, very unsettling, unnerving. Mm-hmm. I think for so many years, there are so many people, whether it's people just across the bridge in San Francisco or elsewhere, across the country, who had so many, crosswords, you could say, to say about, Oakland. But it was a place that so many of us loved growing up for the very reasons that other people would rather not come. But at times there were conflicts there where there were things that we couldn't have in Oakland. We said, you couldn't get that institution or that business or this or that because of what Oakland supposedly was. And for all of us who loved it and hung out here, it's like, fine, we're happy here. So everyone, else who's moving away or wants to be in San Francisco or through the tunnel or elsewhere, it's Godspeed, right? Good luck, and we're all doing our best and making our own choices. So for them people to no longer have a choice after years of being told, that they're making essentially the wrong one by staying, and then for the very institutions that for which people were lobbying or the very businesses and other entities that they hoped would come to the city to only come basically at a point where many of the people who dreamt of one day enjoying those things no longer have the sufficient resources to be able to stay, and there's not sufficient systemic support to be able to make sure that they can stay and that there's sufficient housing and affordable housing and the like. It's very unnerving, and that's where the word kind of trauma comes in. You got used to a certain way of life, but you're kind of in this battle all the time of, saying, I'm here for a reason, I'm here because I want to be all the things people say. The one thing, and then the next day, one day, you wake up and people say, Oakland's a great place, and it's on the New York Times top 5 list So let's just put down, you know, a cafe or a restaurant or whatever it is right here in the middle of, you know, a neighborhood, and let's start getting people out of here. And that's weird. Hmm. You know, it's weird. And people aren't just moving up the road, right? They're moving 1 hour, 2 hour, 3 hours away or to a different state. And so, you know, you have people who can't necessarily enjoy the fruits of their labor to try and build a dynamic space. And so to create support around that, I think, is difficult. You know, you need, I think, large-scale healing circles, but you also need, you know, people in systems and people who are moving in, I think, to also view people who are already here as human beings, right, who, you know, have certainly a right to be here, and new people have a right to come. You know, I'm very fortunate that, you know, my parents moved out to Oakland before I was born, so I could be born here. When my parents moved out, and they moved from Chicago, they came to Oakland to be in Oakland. They didn't come to live in a city called Oakland that had Chicago with it. So everything that came with it, for better or for worse, they came to have me experience that and for them to experience that, and that was a big part of growing up. And so, you know, the displacement and not acknowledging that there are people here who very much make up the fabric of why people wanted to move here in the first place, and not moving and working to try and protect their right to be here, to me feels like a miss.
Brandon Nicholson is an Oakland native, and he started the Hidden Genius Project back in 2012. They provide training and mentorship to young Black male high school students in computer science and software development. And Brandon, gosh, put a lot on the table talking about trauma, healing, what it's like to grow up in the Bay Area and then see all of these changes and so many people feel left out. And so if this applies to you, we'd love to hear from you, especially if you work for a nonprofit or if you run a nonprofit. The toll-free number is 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org or tweet us. What do you think, Marissa? Are these issues on the city's radar, talking about trauma? I mean, running some of these nonprofits is difficult enough, but then having to wonder if you're going to stay in the community you serve is also extremely difficult.
Yeah, I think this is really everything to us right now, trying to get at displacement at so many different levels, residential, commercial, cultural. And I think Brandon is one of the people I've met who is doing the best work on this issue. I mean, he's an Oakland native and he's running an organization to help Oaklanders get jobs in the tech sector and create new companies. So that in itself is an anti-displacement strategy. But from the city perspective, I think especially for nonprofits who are serving residents who are also experiencing trauma. Right. One of the organizations I'm working with, Missy, works to prevent child sex trafficking. They have a drop-in center. They have to move their drop-in center. Things are looking good. I think they're going to have a successful move. They're fundraising right now to help to try to pay for those moving costs. But there is this real close intersection between the organizations and the communities they serve. And moving is really disruptive for either a family or a company if it's not something they chose to do.
How do you respond when people say that they feel like city officials are spending far more resources and time on the tech sector and not enough on these organizations that do reach out to marginalized communities? Because we always hear tech, 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 start tech companies, right? But what about the groups that focus more on the social problems, homelessness, hunger, what you just talked about, human trafficking?
I can say pretty confidently that I'm actually the city staff person on the tech sector, as well as the person working with the nonprofit community. And I think we have been really clear as a city that our priority for growth in tech is not to bring companies from outside Oakland necessarily, but it's to invest in Oaklanders being able to get jobs in what is one of the leading a dominant sectors in the Bay Area economy. So most of the companies that I've worked with are very active in that space. And Brandon is one of a pretty amazing group of Oaklanders who have founded organizations that work on education, that work on training, or in the city's case, we've partnered with the K4 Center and DevLabs which is a local Oakland firm, been in, doing tech in Oakland for 15 years and now moving into the VC space, to actually create a network to support entrepreneurs of color and female entrepreneurs so that we have more people moving into the creative side of the tech sector and actually creating companies. So that's been our approach to growing tech in Oakland. If the city did nothing in tech as a public agency, it would be growing anyway because the market is just there. So most of the city interventions, I feel like, have been on the side of trying to maintain equity and increase diversity in the tech sector.
Joanne, how would you answer that about San Francisco?
Well, you know, it is hard, is what you're, you know, as we're discussing. And, you know, certainly organizations that are trying to, you know, work with, providing critically needed services to people and are having a hard time, you know, making a living wage, right? So I think, you know, living wage is one of the solutions that are, you know, one of the policies that we care very much about, the development of affordable housing, that, you know, that the nonprofits get regular cost of living adjustments in their contracts so that they can continue to, you know, increase staff salaries and provide the services. So, you know, it's a whole mix of issues there to help organizations and to help the staff be able to really carry out the services. I think from, you know, working with a lot of nonprofits and even through their space needs, we talk a lot about the space that the staff work in and that it needs to be dignified. It needs to be a place where people want to come to work, not just for the clients that they serve that, you know, should have a private or a nice space to receive services, but also that the staff feel good about coming to work. It's a big issue for even just retention as an employer. And so I think that the space also addresses that, not necessarily in a financial way, but certainly in a way of how we feel about coming to work and feeling good about the services that we provide.
Today on Your Call, we are talking about nonprofits struggling to survive, to stay in the Bay Area. What are your thoughts on how cities are dealing with this issue and various organizations are dealing with this issue? And if you run a nonprofit or you work for a nonprofit, we'd love to hear from you. Let's go to Chor in San Francisco. Hi, Chor. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks so much for letting us on. I'm Thor Keselowski. My business partner, Liesa Beckham, is on the line with us. Hello, everybody. Hello, Joanne. How are you?
I'm good, Thor.
This is such an important topic. I think we're doing a project. We're Common Ground Urban Development. We're doing a project at 1850 Bryant in the Mission area specifically to work on nonprofit mitigation, nonprofit displacement mitigation, because nonprofits are so important to the fabric of every city. And I think San Francisco has been a real leader in this, putting its shoulder to the wheel of deploying tax credits, the Nonprofit Displacement Fund, and providing technical support through NCCLF and a bunch of other sort of support services through the mayor's office. I think it's really laudable, and, you know, I compliment their leadership.
All right. Well, thank you so much for calling in, Chor. You can join us at 866-798-8255. You can email feedback@yourcallradio.org, leave a comment on our website, or tweet us at Your Call Radio. We have a comment from Wellington, who says, our organization, it's Bay EMT Program, has been teaching inner city youth to become firefighters and EMTs for 15 years. We've been looking for a space in Oakland to hold our classes, and it's been nothing but dead ends. We talked with multiple city officials, including the mayor's office, about funding and our needs for our facility, but we've got no support. We've placed over 60 youth in first responder jobs throughout the Bay Area. A documentary was done on our program and was featured at the Grand Lake Theater, which was attended by Mayor Schaaf. The Department of Labor did a report on our program. Yet despite all of the success, we're still without a facility or sustained funding. Marissa, what advice would you give to Wellington?
Wellington, we should definitely get in touch. You can email me at mraya, that's M-R-A-Y-A, at oaklandnet.com. And we could talk about how much space you're looking for and your price range. It sounds like a really interesting organization, and I wouldn't give up quite yet.
So what is the process? Because it can be so frustrating. People leave messages and they're not getting calls back. Maybe they go to an office, but they can't get in. What is the process? If you're like Wellington and you're running what sounds like an incredible organization, you can't find space. What should you do?
I think people don't always know to reach out to economic and workforce development. They think we're off trying to get companies from other places to move to Oakland, and that's not what we do. I think contacting the city either through our business assistance center or through directly to an economic development specialist such as myself, that's somebody who can actually do a search for you and then connect you if you need further assistance with a partner like Northern California Community Loan Fund. Every nonprofit I've worked with, I've also recommended they work with NCCLF because they'll actually hold your hand through the negotiation. They also know about other space options that might not be on my radar.
And what advice would you give to Wellington, Joanne?
Wellington, I'd just invite you to also give me a call. I can be reached either at our number at 415-392-8215, or you can email me directly at jlee@nccLF.org. We have a number of real estate consultants that can, you know, look at what your needs are and try to give you some resources or look at some space listings with you. Maybe, you know, if you're looking for classroom space, sometimes we know of other organizations that also provide workshops and trainings, and they might be able to share their workshops, their conference room with you. We love being able to partner organizations and find more efficient and creative uses of space.
Well, thank you for calling, Wellington, and I hope that helps. You can find that information at yourcallradio.org.
Can I plug just a couple of other upcoming resources?
Sure.
This is Marissa. On July 13th, there's a commercial leasing workshop that will be hosted at the East Bay Community Foundation from 9:30 to 12:30. We've been with NCCLF holding these commercial leasing workshops with focus on nonprofits quarterly. We also have a newer program, Keeping Space Oakland, that's specifically for arts and culture nonprofits that provides both technical assistance and financial assistance. And applications are open right now for financial assistance until August 3rd. That's Keeping Space Oakland.
All right, thank you. And we'll put all of those links at yourcallradio.org. If anyone's interested in checking out more about Wellington's organization, it's bayemt.org. I also wanted to ask both of you if there are any rules in place when a massive company does set up shop. So, for example, when Salesforce opens, I think is it next year or later this year? This is going to be one of the tallest buildings in the West Coast. I mean, it already stands out here in San Francisco. And I understand that they're planning to lease a lot of their office space. And I'm guessing it's not going to be affordable, but does the city get involved with this and say, okay, Salesforce, you can build the tallest building in San Francisco, but you have to have a certain amount of space that's affordable for nonprofits?
We've seen some, usually in San Francisco, the city takes the lead in negotiating a community benefits agreement with the developer of the project. So I'm not familiar with what is in the Salesforce agreement. And another example of that is the community benefits agreement that was negotiated with Forest City for the 5M project at Fifth and Mission. There is some set-aside space for nonprofits and for arts and arts programming there, as well as affordable housing. It's a huge development, but that's an example of how cities are often involved in trying to carve out some space or resources for the nonprofits.
And what about the Uber building that's going to open next year in Oakland? They initially said they were going to bring 3,000 employees into the old Sears building on Broadway. Now they say that they're going to bring in a couple hundred, and they plan to lease the rest of the roughly 380,000 square foot seven-store building to other tenants. I'm getting this information from the Mercury News.
Yes. That's a great example, and you can believe that we have looked at this problem and said, hey, nonprofits would be a great idea for some of that extra space. That's an interesting case because the city can suggest good ideas and can partner with Uber and can introduce them to potential tenants or other organizations in Oakland that they can partner with. But there's no leverage where we could say you have to do this. So it's really a matter of providing resources and recommendations.
And so goodwill on the part of the corporation.
That's an important factor.
Hmm. Well, it'll be interesting to watch because this is going to open next year. And then I just found this, the Mercury News again, the Salesforce building, which is a $1 billion skyscraper. It'll be the tallest office building west of Chicago. This thing is massive. And this is going to be opening later this year. So we'll have to follow that and find out if they do rent to nonprofits. Brandon, final thoughts from you. I'm sure we have other people listening who are struggling with these issues, really thinking about these issues. Because you have gone through this process of starting a nonprofit in Oakland in 2012 and really dealing with these issues, what advice would you give people?
I think probably the key piece of advice is just not to give up. We have a great opportunity to do some extremely important work. And I think beyond not giving up, also just making sure to work in partnership. And for all the things I think we've been able to accomplish as an organization, and there are many things for which I'm very proud. I don't think that we've done anything too significant just on our own. Probably nothing of significance has come on our own. And so I obviously got to hear today about two, great organizations and great people that helped us in NCCLF and the city, and particularly with Marissa's help. But all the work we do, our partners for our summer programming, the David E. Glover Education Technology Center in Oakland, the Rise Center for Youth Enrichment, all the organizational and programming partners we have, of course, Oakland Natives Give Back, where we moved, we're definitely better and stronger together. And it's clear that we need each other. So I think, that's the most important thing is just to power through and try and build a coalition and build power together.
Brandon Nicholson founded the Hidden Genius Project in 2012. They provide training and mentorship to young Black male high school students in computer science and software development. Brandon, we'd love to do a show about this project, and I'm guessing the best time to do it would be before school starts, right?
Actually, we're right in the middle of our most intensive programming time now. We actually, during the summer, we're programming for 7 weeks straight for about 8 hours a day, Monday through Friday.
Wow.
But I'm happy to do it whenever. We're always trying to make a way to make it work.
Well, maybe a great time would be when the program ends and we can find out how it went. Thank you so much for joining us. Joanne Lee is with the Northern California Community Loan Fund, and Marissa Raya is an analyst with the City of Oakland in the Economic and Workforce Development Department. Joanne and Marissa, thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Rose.
Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you for joining us. You can find more information and resources at yourcallradio.org. Coming up tomorrow, it's our weekly media roundtable. This week, the Senate Republicans failed to pass their health care bill, which would cut taxes for the rich while reducing federal funding for low-income and older Americans, also people with disabilities. 22 million people would lose their health care coverage. We'll also talk about the single payer bill here in California. That's tomorrow at 10. Your Call is produced here at KALW. To listen to past shows or sign up for our podcast, visit yourcallradio.org. Thanks to Andrew Stelzer and Sana Salim for producing today's show. You can find more information at yourcallradio.org. Thanks for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call.